Okay, well, let's start then. This is the fourth of my talks this weekend. Some people have sat in for more than one. I never do the same talk twice because I don't mind the conscious doing it, so I don't just give it a great lesson. I do stay off topic, but there are certain things about the brain and the way they work that I have to incorporate in each thing I do because that's the way it is. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand the talk. So today is about givers and takers. This was a theory of mine that I developed after being in a relationship where I didn't understand where I got to the position that I did. And I did beat myself up for many years over it, and I was quite stable. But then I came out of this theory and sort of explained how I got myself into it. Because I think with this thing we always think it's the other person, or what bit did I have of it? We give them all the blame, or we give ourselves all the blame, depending on how we feel about ourselves. So this is to sort of balance that out a bit. So my name's Stephen Blake, and I run a company called Respondability. It's about these two phases. So it's about the being. We all would like to think that we're going around something like that, but underneath it, there's times when we're like that. And if you like that lots of times, then there's probably something, some program running that's actually saying, I don't deserve to be happy or whatever. So today is about givers and takers. And givers and takers is a very interesting model of things. Because in a relationship, there tends to be a giver and a taker. And if you recognise yourself as a giver, and then you can see why you end up the taker. Because people who give, I don't mean a present or whatever, but I mean just in general that it's sort of like, it's not about them, it's all about sort of the other person. And they flood them with love and everything that you can possibly give for them, do everything they can for them. And the other person goes, yeah, how's that? Oh, yeah. And at first they go, oh, well, so I'm not thanking you. After that they change it to, yeah. And after that they just take it. And then you start to think, what is going on with you? So, let's look at this from a taker's point of view. Takers don't particularly know the takers. They obviously are drawn to givers. Because if you are being given things, that's still straight to you. So the person will be drawn to you. And initially, there's that thing there. Hi.
Hi.
There is a thing there that it's a very good relationship to start off with, because you both give each other a reason. So the taker goes and gets all his or her needs less. And try not to make this sexist. Gets his or her needs met, and the giver gets their needs met because they're the reason they're giving. What happens is when it gets to the point where the taker then just takes it without any gratitude, it's already gone too far because the giver keeps giving, because that's the nature of the giver. So you get to the point where the giver will start recognising now that none of them needs to connect. And so it happens now that the giving gets a bit less. So as the giving gets a bit less, the taker gets more annoyed. And so the taker demands more. Which then infuriates the giver. And so it drifts off. And if you've been in and out of relationships and it started off wonderful and then ended, you need to look in there as, is that the thing that I bring to it, is giving. Because it will lead to this point that we all cross, where we get to the stage where we go, no, I'm not getting anything out of this. And then of course when we try and get something out of it, it's too late. Because you've actually trained the person not to react to even getting anything, you've also trained them not to give anything to you. And we all do this by simply giving us a compliment, giving us a gift, and then we go, oh, and if we get it, then we're beautiful, and if it says we're beautiful, we are. And that's a bit like me with this bottle of water saying, have this bottle of water. No, I don't want it. And the takers, you see, it sounds like givers are wonderful and takers are awful. It's not, it's just givers are that way because they are givers. And takers are like that because they are takers. And if we've all had relationships where we've been the person who, it's almost even the way you react in the end. Never start as evil. Even the worst guys start off as charmers and work their way into the bad guy, right? Because nobody wants the bad guy to start off with. And they work their way, and it's almost like they just saw for it. Had a relationship with a woman who did that. I mean, she just knew how to manipulate me into all sorts of things. And the key to it is, in a relationship, the one who loves least has power. As soon as I tweeted that, I realised, because I was in a relationship that I absolutely adored it. And when it got to the point where I couldn't cope with it anymore because so many demands were on me, and it was very manipulative, and the demands could never be right. So even if I did it how she said she wanted to do it and everything else, she was still coming in and changing it because I didn't. And it's a wonderful way of putting them down so that they get control. Because they don't actually get what they want, because they're always telling you that you're doing something to make sure that you don't ever get the satisfaction of I gave them that and it's perfect. There's always this sort of like, and they pick on the thing that's wrong rather than looking at, this thing is wonderful for 99% of it. So they tell you the 1% that actually they didn't want. And so the one who loves least in a relationship has the power. Because if they don't care if you leave or whatever happens to you, then they've got a hold of you compared with you absolutely going and not wanting them to leave. I mentioned this to my new partner of 10 months the other week. And she went into a terrible sort of like, oh my god. And I went, what have I said? And she said, not about others. She said, I've just recognised myself in the previous relationship. And that's exactly what it was. And I also called her a rock. I said she was my rock, but since I've met her, that there was this sort of stability that I had somebody there who I knew whatever happened would be there for me. And that upset her because the previous partner who had been abusive to her called her rock. So the issue we have is we have these things in our past that we are attached to. And we don't particularly get too attached to great things, but we do get attached to anything that has a lot of feelings involved with it. So if it's a good thing, then it's fine. So if I can get something wonderful, it won't particularly be traumatic, but it will be memorable because it's really significant. So even like the birth of the children or whatever, it's just so wonderful, so loving if you remember it. But if I ask you to think of something sad, you'll go back to something quite traumatic. Because that's what we remember. We don't remember the everyday stuff. If I ask you what you had for breakfast 27 years, who cares? Why would you remember it? But if something happened 27 years ago that was really significant in your life, you can link back to it. And the thing is, when we go back in the past, we relive it. This is what I'm showing. I'm going to get everyone to shake it because I actually think it's something sad. And I know at least one person in the room that says you were thinking sad. And needs to get away. Okay? Straight up. Okay. I do this all the time with clients because literally you can nip in and out of fields. And this is the bit I want to emphasise, is that you can be in control of those fields. But the way your brain works is there's a conscious part of the brain, and the conscious part of the brain holds 8 bits of data. So that's like, if I read my phone numbers out to you, one number at a time, that would fill your conscious part of your brain. Right? If I carried on talking, you would either remember my number, or you'd listen to me, but you can't do both. Right? That's why I'm not going to tell you the number. So that's the size of the conscious part of the brain. Now the bit that everybody calls the subconscious, and sub means under consciousness, I don't like that word. I think it's a horrible word. So I use the word unconscious, because there's an awareness, which is your conscious, and an unawareness, which is your unconscious. And as part of the work I have to do as a hypnotherapist, and other things, the word unconscious is a very good one to use, because when you talk to people about their unconscious, you're actually talking as though they're going together unconscious, and you can actually put people into trance with the word. So it's a brilliant one to use. And your unconscious is vastly misunderstood. So when we hear a voice in your head, when you hear that voice, if you're actually thinking, what voice in my head? That's the voice. Okay, so we've all got it going on. We actually believe that voice as though it's directing us. And yet that voice is not our voice. It's not even the unconscious telling us. The unconscious runs programs that you have. That's its own duty. It can be very creative, it can do millions of things. Its capacity, I mean, if you think of the 8 bits of data that your conscious holds, your unconscious brain has, or unconscious mind, has 100 trillion data connections that can all interact with each other. And you think of how many combinations there are for the number of balls in the lottery, one could be 5 of them, and there's millions of combinations. Imagine that with 100 trillion times 100 trillion times 100 trillion times 100 trillion, 100 trillion times. And they think that the output of that is more than there are atoms in the universe. So your unconscious has absolutely infinity of capacity. It can do anything. But the unconscious is restricted. We have a conscious brain to be the beings that we are, to direct the unconscious. So when you're born with all the programs that come with a baby that make it safe and survive. So if you're made to eat and drink and all the excretory channels are there, the lungs and the heart, everything's running through your unconscious part of the brain. And then as we develop, we actually learn things. And when we learn things, we feel awkward about it. And even now, if I ask you to do something you've never done before, however simple it will feel awkward. But once you know it once, twice, 3 times, you start to go, oh yeah, I got the hang of this. As soon as you get the hang of it and you repeat it enough times, it's fed to your unconscious and it goes, oh, I like that, and it does it for you. The most technical thing in the world to do is walk. It involves so many things and so many parts of your body, not just your legs. I mean, your ears have got things to do with it and everything. When we first started walking, we sort of lift one leg or we stand up and fall down, stand up and fall down. At no point do we ever say, this is not for me. You know, or your mum goes, oh, stop it. We've had 3 days of walking now, we're never going to do it. So we keep doing things by repetition until the unconscious can take it over. If it didn't work like that, we couldn't operate at all. Our unconscious is about 99.9% of everything we do. We don't consciously think about much. So it's almost got free time, because you came in this room today, you haven't seen that particular chair or something before, but you knew it was a chair. You knew what to do with it. And if I brought the most strange design chair in and put it in the corner, someone would sit in it and know it's a chair. And you know what to do with it. And you never see them in Knife and Fork. And if you haven't seen Knife and Fork before, it's sort of like, you know, we actually invited her. There was a different girlfriend who, the daughter invited her friend, who was 13-year-old, and she came around to dinner with us, and we put a Knife and Fork out, and she stared at this plate, and then was watching us, and I said, are you alright? She went, yeah, and she picked the knife up. She didn't know what she was doing with a knife and fork at 13. Or was it in the fork? And even then, it was sort of like, stab it in. And so she was having the whole dinner. And you're cracking up on it. How could you not know how to use a knife and fork? But once we've done something over and over again, we get it. So if you drive, the first time that you over in a car, there's an accelerator and a clutch. And the instructor tells you what to do, and you put the clutch in and put it in here, and then you've got to lift this pedal up, but put this pedal down. But at a certain speed, right? And we don't get the gist of it for ages. In fact, we can kangaroo down. And you can't do that however well you try it. In fact, I'm willing to get anybody 10 quid if they can go in the car like that and kangaroo down the road. You can't do it because at some point you'll accelerate while you put the clutch in. Because you just won't be able to do it. But when you first do it, no problem. The neck braces and the strut, isn't it? So, and then, as you're doing that for the first time, you've got to practice this, I've got to let this one up. The instructor says, mirror. And suddenly there's, I can't cope anymore. I've got to mirror as well as do it. Stay about that. I'm just going to do this and that. And of course you need to give them because you're separate. But now you get in the car, and you don't even know you're doing it. In fact, you drive so unconsciously now for doing things over the years, you'll actually drive through a whole village, get the other side of it, and then go, have I been through that village yet? Have you all done that? You're actually safer in that mode than you are normally. Because if you normally get up the back side of cars and have to do all that, if you actually drive unconsciously, you'll actually notice when you sort of come to your consciousness that you're a good, safe distance back from them. And you don't particularly overtake them because that's a conscious procedure. Because you've got this inbuilt survival system that says, I will look after you. Now the unconscious gets a lot of sick because when we hear this voice that tells us, fat, ugly, unworthy, whatever it tells us, we actually think that's coming from up as something we have to notice it. And the reality is we don't, because it's not us. And it's not even your unconscious. Your unconscious will not give you instructions apart from running a program you've already got in there. And it's perfectly capable of making new programs. But it's not allowed to. It has to take instructions from this conscious bit. That's why it's there. So it knows the conscious is what. But it's only got 8 minutes of data. So when we have our old habit we want to break, or if we're a giver and we realise that we need to start actually accepting what we're doing, or if we're a taker and we realise we need to start giving what we're taking, it's a habit we've formed, and we've now formed a massive neural pathway in our brain that just goes into automatic and says, this is what we do. I know the person who got abusive, and she had wired the brain that it automatically knew how to actually screw me up, how to make me do things against my will, and make me feel as though I was wrong not to. I'm sure it must be university for this, it's on the quiet. They get very skilled at it, don't they? I'm not sure if they're born with it or they develop it. My God, they're good, aren't they? And for years ago, oh my God, yeah, why did I do that? And you still want to feel guilty. So when you've wired your brain in a certain way, it doesn't mean you can't change it. All it means is you've accepted that way of being. So I deal with a lot of people who've been through trauma and child abuse, all sorts of different things. And the brain is wired in a way where they keep going back from there into the past to revisit the thing that happened to them. And because they keep going back there and keep revisiting it, And this is the issue, that although I'm trained in hypnosis and NLP, I don't use techniques anymore. I've worked out how the brain works, and I actually work it by how the brain works. And one of the main things how the brain works is that when you store a memory there, at the time it's a very accurate thing of what you perceived happened at the time. Nothing is entirely accurate, because what we perceive is what we see. So we see somebody suspicious who fits the thing of a suspicious person, but if the one that looks a bit innocent had done it, somehow we make it match to the guilty looking one. And anyway, whatever we see at the time is what we put over. When we revisit that, we actually change the story. And it's a bit like if you tell a funny story and it doesn't get a laugh, and then you change it a bit and it gets a laugh, you now include that extra bit in there. And so you add bits into the story to make it funnier and funnier. And every time you tell it, somebody laughs at a different place and you think, oh yeah, I think that was it. Or somebody will interject with something else. Oh, I've got nothing to do. And so eventually this joke gets funnier and funnier and funnier. But the same happens with trauma. So you have trauma where something happens to you, and you revisit it, and because it's going to stick in your memory, because it's got all emotions attached, you actually intensify all those emotions. Or you can do what some people do, which is exaggerate what's happened. So I believe it came to me the day, she'd been on holiday, and she'd actually ended up spending all the holiday, not enjoying it. She spent all the time complaining to the people that were renting her this apartment. And she told me that there were 1,000 million things wrong with it. And I said, are you sure it was only 1,000 million? Because that's how I break it out of it. You make them see the absurdity. But in doing so, she gave me an insight into her head. Because to say 1,000 million things wrong with it, rather than 1,000 things wrong with it, or hundreds of things wrong with it, which is normal close to my head, I mean, this had to be bigger than anybody else's problem ever. And it's very interesting when people talk to me, because I actually latch onto words, because words are how our brain processes things. And anything we say to ourselves, we believe. Well, why wouldn't we? Because we said it. Right? So when we tell ourselves things like I'm not worthy, or I'm fat, or I'm ugly, or whatever you say to yourself, just think about what you would say if somebody actually told you that. If somebody you didn't know came up and told you those things, you'd either be absolutely devastated, or you'd want to punch them. And yet, we say that to ourselves. We'll look in the mirror and say that. Now, there's ways of changing your neural pathways. And the main one I deal with is, if somebody believes something to be true, and that's messing their life up because it's in the past and they're guilty about it, or it's very traumatic and they think it's true, I take them back in the past and we look at it realistically. And as soon as they see it for what it is, can't sit in your brain in the same way. It just can't, you can't go back there. You can't go back. If I remove the trauma going there and actually get them to see it for what it was, and sometimes it's just, you know, wrong place, wrong time thing, that there's no malice in it, just something happened. And even sometimes there's other people who have done things, so there's, did they need to do that to me? So, because the second thing that happens about your brain and how it works is, it has to finish things off. It can't stand this idea of this unfinished business. So it's forever looking for the answer. Everything. Any unfinished business you've got ever in your past is there, just rolling around on this thing. So let's go back to relationships. So somebody says something to you in a relationship, and there's a thing called an association. An association is just something that triggers you off. We're usually not aware of it because it's the unconscious is processing everything. It's looking at this room, it's looking for danger, it's looking for fun, it's looking for everything. It's going, what's interesting, exciting, or different in here, and it's working all that out. But it goes through the filters of your perception. So if you think there's danger in here, you'll look for the danger. If you think there's fun in here, you'll look for the fun. You'll find what you're looking for. So while it's doing this, it's picking up on associations. So we go, well, what happened last time I was in a room that was actually like this? Somebody says something to you, and the association goes, because straight away you're going to be pain with the thing that they just said. It's upset you. But the trouble is, it's upset you before consciously you know why it's upset you. Because not only do you have 1,000 trillion data points, your unconscious brain works 100 times faster than your conscious. So when we perceive something, it's perceived at the unconscious level, it goes through all the filters and everything else, and then it churns up and it goes, okay, what happened the last time I was in a situation like this? And then it goes, oh, I broke up with my partner. And you go, that's what's going to happen. Yeah. So sometimes when we say something to our partners, and it's quite innocuous really, and they go into this rage, and we think, what the hell did I say? It's not the actual thing that you said. It's the way they feel, because what they're doing is they're looking at this loop that's going around of unfinished business, and they're actually looking for where did this happen last. So the relationship case comes out, and they open it up, and they throw the new thing in, and they get stirred. Okay, so everything that's in there gets stirred, and then that happened. Oh, that's how this happened. And the memory was like, oh, that was terrible. And then I heard somebody else make it the same, and they go all through that. And my idea is that if you just keep filling the case up, eventually you just need a bigger and bigger case. And because you don't fill it up with good stuff, you're actually just getting more and more baggage. And this, in your brain, is the equivalent of taking not just one case of holiday, but all these cases on holiday with you every minute of every day, and looking for the problems in them. And that's why we talk about mental baggage. So my idea is, when you've got a case open, you actually say, oh, what fits me? Oh, don't fit me anymore, it's right in there. It's out of date, it's right in there. I don't like it anymore, it's right in there. You wouldn't want a case full of warm clothes if you're going to the hot climate. And if you're going to the Antarctic, you wouldn't want a case full of pretty little things that are stupid. But that's what we do, we carry everything around us. But we only carry all the bad stuff. We don't keep nipping into memories of good stuff. And yet that's what we can do. And I'm going to show you that. So we'll start off with talking about how your body shape affects us. There's no split between mind and body. You can't do the it's all in your head or it's just a physical thing. Even if you break your arm, the pain will be in your arm, but it comes from your head. Because as soon as the brain goes, broken your arm, it goes, right, I'll give you so much pain that you can't think of anything else until you fix it, and then I'll let the pain go. Right? Because if we didn't get pain, if you didn't have pain ever, you'd break your arm, you'd carry on working, the bones would go outside, it would go on with seven and everything else, and then you'd die. So the brain goes, oh, crap, this is good. Now, if you strap your arm, it'll give you a little bit of pain. Right? It knows the difference. It goes, well, you need to sort that out. You're probably not going to right now because you're busy, but when you get in a minute, sort that out. And as soon as you get in a minute, it'll give you a bit more pain just to go, well, okay, sort that out. But you break it, and there's so much pain you end up in the enemy, and the extra stability, and the dry, and everything else, and then you put plaster on it, and the brain goes, well, don't do any more than that, and it takes the pain away. It's still broken. You don't need your pain anymore. Yeah. And if you've got chronic, anybody here with chronic pain? That's pain that you've had a long time, but you don't need. Okay. You might be able to turn that pain off. Right? There's a possibility. In fact, the lady here on the cafe birthday today. So if anyone was with me from last time, okay, she had a product card. I said, you might want to turn it off. And she said, well, I think that's right. And I said, well, I'll go. 5 minutes. Didn't know whether it worked or not. She said, I've got a lot of medicines. Because all that's happening is you get this small filament of the thing when you're doing something new, of the connection in the brain. When you get something that's on a regular basis, it carries on making this connection stronger and stronger and stronger. That's why if you suffer from anxiety or something, it's always there, because it's a nice, easy road for it to get there. If you get chronic pain, you form this big neural pathway. But the trouble is, there's no turning off point where it goes, don't need this anymore. At no point does it go, oh, well, she's got it for 2 years, and what could she possibly do? It doesn't do that. It just forgets. But you've got this massive motor in there of this thing. And all you have to do is convince your unconscious that the thing that you want is more beneficial than the thing it's giving you. So for it to turn the pain off, it has to know that you wouldn't come to more harm because you turn the pain off than if you keep it. Because, as I say, the unconscious doesn't do that harm at all. There's nothing wrong or bad in the unconscious. It might run a bad program, but any program that's in there, you installed it at some point. And at the time you installed it, you thought it was some good for you. You might have even left it to the unconscious to install the program and learn from it, because it was such a shock. You know, something happens, it's traumatic. And you go, oh my God, I don't want to go there again. And the unconscious goes, okay, I'll make you a program that makes sure you don't go there again. Right? And it gives you the anxiety or whatever to make you aware that if it happens again, you're ready for this time. And so you go through your whole life with this anxiety of something's going to happen, something's going to happen. And you lead a miserable life because of it. But there's no need for that, because the original thing that did it, it might have been the first time you were traumatized, and it didn't know how to deal with it, but you would know how to deal with it as a grown-up. And quite often these things happen in childhood. And even things you couldn't do anything about, so I did a child abuse and all sorts of things, and I take people back. And lots of times it's not the abuse that hurt them, it's the fact they think there's something to blame them on. And they actually thought they brought it on and that they deserve more of it. And by nipping back then, looking at the pain they had, they're actually punishing themselves for something that they think they did. And if you're 4 and you're raped by your father, it's not because you were wearing a pretty little dress. But some people actually think that. And it's horrendous. And so we install programs that eventually know the difference. Probably weren't even any of it. So should we have a look at your pain for you? Okay. Right, I'm drifting topics a bit, but it's all interesting about how the brain works, because you can deal with it. So the thing that comes on, like pain or the anxiety or whatever, you can't deal with it at a conscious level. If you just tell it to go away, you've got something else going on in your head as well. And if you go and go away, or you're concentrating on the problem, you actually get more of the problem. If you concentrate on a solution, the unconscious is forever trying to get you whatever it is you're thinking about. And there was a filmmaker called The Secret that lots of people have seen. And the only problem with The Secret was they didn't tell you what the secret was. They missed the most important bit of The Secret. And that's, it's okay thinking about things and thinking about them in a positive light, but you have to put your emotions into it. Because the story of everything is based around the emotions that are attached to it. So the trivial things in life, we don't remember. So if you can think of something trivial now that still annoys you, it's not the thing that happened that annoyed you. It's the association with it, like the injustice of it or something, that's bothering you. And because we were, I was smacked as a kid, I'm 62 now. That was the start of the thing, but smack. So I can't do anything that looks like a shortcut. Because if I take shortcuts, I always get caught out. I get caught out every time I'm naughty. Or I think I'm naughty. I'm always caught out. Even I tripped a corner once in a van I was driving because I was going too fast. And the road looked clear, but there was a bush on the corner, and behind it was a cyclist. And on the wrong side of the road, and then he mopped him up. And he put the brakes on for the car. I mean, I can't even trip a corner in a car. Because that's my programme, is I have to do things right or I'm going to get caught out. And that's the overbearing thing we have. But you can change, but you have to do it at an unconscious level. And when we deal with the unconscious, we have to talk to it in a way that it will do it for us. We have to bargain with it. We can't plead with it, because that's a sort of low level of super statement. You see, we should be able to dominate it, because we've got the conscious brain that should be able to correct it. But what your unconscious is going to repeat back is, well, I gave you this to save you, to save your life. I've dealt with a lot of people with ME, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia. And they have a specific concern that people think they're lazy. And the reason they have a concern that people think they're lazy is because every person that's got that isn't a lazy person. In fact, they're exactly the opposite. They are a driven person. And the reason I know that is because that's what brings the illness on. I discovered this about 3 years ago, and everybody laughed, and I got quite a lot of abuse on the internet. There was even a site dedicated to slagging me off about it. A year after that, the Fibromyalgia Association printed a thing that was almost word for word on the theory. Because I helped somebody. Somebody came to me, I understood it well enough to get out, oh, I think that's how that worked. It took 2 weeks to work out. Have to do that. And if people followed it, I could help anybody escape from those illnesses. Because they're the same ones. Because what's happening is, if somebody drives himself and drives himself and drives himself, I don't mean just physically, but mentally as well, with all the I should, I must, I have to, you know, and if you're busy with a young family and all that as well, then you think you've got to fit all these things in. A lot of the pressure is your own pressure to be perfect or provide the best or do the best. This is what pisses people off when they think they're not. And so you drive yourself and drive yourself, and eventually the survival system starts to go, whoa, you're going to be dead. You cannot keep going at that pace, your heart will give up or something like that. And so it thinks, well, what should I do? What should I do? How am I going to save this person from killing himself in the afternoon? So it goes, okay, let's trip a switch off. So it flicks a bit of power off, so you start to get a bit tired and everything. And the thing is, if you go, well, we know we're doing things and we're after that, you'll be fine. But you don't, you fight it twice as hard now, but with half the resources. So now you're actually burning up far more of your energy, and you're not getting the lesson. So it goes, let's take another switch. And it keeps flipping switches until it works and works and works. And eventually you end up bedridden. Now, if you're bedridden and you're still threatening the bed and stuff, then it'll give you pain. And you go, oof, you can't even think about it now. That's why you get brain fog. So you can't think about things because it's your thoughts that are hurting it of all the things you can't do. So it switches your brain off as well. So, although this is your unconscious survival system giving you all these things that are painful or real, it's actually doing it in your own best interest, it thinks. So the way to escape from something that your unconscious has given you, one of these programs that you don't like, is to actually have a chat with it and say, look, the thing that you've given me is actually worse than the thing you think you're saving me from. And you have to bargain with it. And when I bargain with the unconscious, I only get it to be yeses. I don't get it to be noes. Because you can't live your life on the, shall I do this, look at the coin type thing, yes, no, yes, no. Because nobody can control that. You know, whatever you believe in, if you can flip me 100 heads in one go, I'll believe you. But until you can do that, it's just wrong. If you ask your unconscious to do something for you, it cannot lie. If it says it's going to do something, it will do it. If I'm helping somebody under hypnosis and I think it's working or I'm not sure, I'll say, when you install that, please give me a yes. And I'll get a yes. And I know it's worked. Every time it's worked. If I don't get a yes, then I have to carry on doing all the work to convince it to put install my program. Because if it's not certain that the thing you're going to change it for is better than the thing that's already there, it won't work. Okay. Anybody else in pain all the time? Okay. Shall we have a little go at pain? Would that be a good session? Yeah? Okay. Now, for the rest of you, this will just be a yes session with the brain. But for those of you who have got pain, I'm just going to add a few extra bits. So this is getting into the brain. For those of you who haven't got any pain to switch off, I'm just going to ask your unconscious to give yourself a yes. You can choose that, and let your brain know it, and it will give you it, so you can nod your head, or your head goes on the side, or your thumb on the picture, whatever you choose. If you do, you can do this with a pen and water, but you're never quite sure whether you've actually done it yourself or, you know, it's actually real. So I wanted to give you something dramatic that you will actually know that you're unconscious to. I want your unconscious to know to give you something so dramatic that you can't do anything but go, oh yeah, that's my unconscious. Okay. For those of you without pain, I want all your unconscious. For those of you without pain, I'm just going to give you a yes to say it's in touch with you. You're all just going to thank you. Yeah? So I'd like you to just close your eyes for a second, just relax, get yourself nice and relaxed. And just say to your unconscious, thank you for keeping me alive all these years, if you mention your age for that, and for running my heart and my lungs and everything else. Thank you for everything you've done for me. And I know there's some programs in there that sooner or later I will want to adapt and change because they're not very beneficial to me. But that is not your fault. You're only running the programs you're doing. And for those of us with pain, I just want you to understand that pain is only needed when the thing is sudden and urgent. When it's no longer needed, if it's just you've got arthritis or something that you cannot do anything about, and the medical people can't do anything about, there is absolutely no point in you continuing that pain. And I want everybody now to get a yes from their unconscious. Yes, that their unconscious exists, and I'll just give you a yes. Or yes, that it agrees that pain is unnecessary when you have it a long time and there's nothing you can do about it. Just show them and ask for that. And I want your unconscious to give you a yes that's so profound that you'll know that's it. And when you get a yes, all apart from those of you in pain, just please turn to your state. Just give you a yes. Now, you can't force this. This is not you doing anything. This is your unconscious doing a yes. So, for those people in pain there, I'll take it a step further. So, how I convince you yet that chronic pain is no longer needed for me? Yes. Are you willing to turn that pain off? No other pain, you still get pain even where you need it, should you break your arm or whatever. Are you willing now to turn that old pain off? Turn that pain off now. Every single bit of that old pain, take all that pain away and replace it with a nice tingling sensation. Just start to feel what a well feels like. And as soon as you replace that old pain with this wonderful tingling sensation, give it yes. So Brilliant. So, yes.
Yes.
So, I did mention this sort of thing in an earlier session, and so it's about how you can use this, because everybody will get something. The easiest thing to reprogram yourself with anything, or to be creative with a new tool, because the way the brain works is, because it works on anything that's unfinished and tries to find the answer, if you have all the stuff that you're working on, next time it springs to mind, deal with it. Just say, okay, right, I'm sick of this recurring thought or dream. I am going to deal with it now. What's involved in it? Who's involved in it? What can I learn from it? And it's not about blame. So it's not about going, oh, it's their fault, my fault, is it? What can I learn from it? And as soon as you've got what you can learn from it, you say, right, I've dealt with that now. I am not going back there anymore. Right? That is the end of that. And you'll be able to go back there if you want to, but you don't have to say anything. Just let go.
Hiya.
If you want to program something in or program something out, just before you go to sleep. So when you've laid down in bed and you're nice and relaxed, you just get into that drifting in sort of state. You can actually do it first in the morning by snoozing your alarm and just drifting out and drifting in. So press the alarm and just going straight back down again. If you actually say to your brain, I've got a problem, just before you go to sleep, it will keep you annoyed all night. You'll dream about it, but you won't resolve it. All that will happen is you wake up in the morning. As soon as you become aware, it will go, oh, don't forget you've got a problem. And it'll just remind you. Whereas if you actually say, I have a challenge I want to overcome, I need the solution to this. Now, I've had once where it actually won't be able to work on something because it needs extra detail to work on it. It won't look at 3 in the morning to actually go and check to me out of my bathroom. And I had to check these things out to go back to bed to go, yeah, it's indeed a relation to the thing. Then I went, okay. And I go, I actually laid in to the end of the day and it won't be able to. And the thing I couldn't work out consciously, my unconscious worked out just like that. No problem at all. Because when we try and work something out consciously, we filter it and we miss out things. So the problem I had was a system that kept leaking. But it didn't leak to anyone. Didn't leak in the toilet, it didn't leak on the floor. So where was this water going? Couldn't work it out at all. I've been a plumber for 20 years. So it was like, I can't work this anymore. I didn't want to take the pan out again because it was very difficult to get out. So when I was consciously thinking about it, I kept filtering out, I don't want it to be a pan, I don't want it to be a pan. Like, even though I thought it was out for everything. And so in the end, so the conscious took out of it, went and participated in the past. And then how do you do it? Sorry? So, just a moment there. You may nip into thoughts and feelings that you feel out of control with. That's because there is no conscious level. And they're happening before you can do anything about it. But when you get them, you've got the chemical system going around your body that says, this is, you've got to react to this now, you're anxious or you're angry or whatever. If you deal with that bit, you're just dealing with the symptoms and you're masking it or you're finding a technique to survive. If you want to deal with anything that's in the past that really bothers you, you have to go back at the unconscious level and deal with it. And you can now that someone talks towards that, if it's more dramatic than that, then obviously consider it. But if you've got the general things that you want to work on, pass it over to your doctor before you go to bed. Ask for the solution without telling them the problem. Ask for the solution to this. What's causing it? What do I need to do? It's usually about learning a lesson. As soon as you learn the lesson, you finish off the way the brain works, and it's no longer looking for the answer. As soon as you give it the answer, this is what I do. My therapy is called realised therapy, because there's a split second in my consulting room where somebody gets it, and they change in an instant. So I might have over several hours, I've made slight changes, but when they get it, the brain doesn't work that way anymore. It's like you pop the lid off the cell, you know. It's sort of, you can't do that. Yes, yeah, the harmonics, I have them all the time. And the thing is, I get it about a minute before they do. So I get this wonderful, oh yeah. And then I go, this is why. And then they go, oh my God. So, welcome to your aha moment. If you want to talk to me about anything, Christmas, you understand. I've been Stephen Blake, you've been wonderful, thank you.